Welcome to the Big Green Politics podcast. I'm Julia.
And I'm Sadan. We are back to bring some positive vibes. This episode is all about the Greens' recent achievements. So we're talking about the Green Wave. The idea of doing this episode came from when we were doing research for the podcast. We literally couldn't find just one source that has all the recent global green achievements from the elections. So we wanted to have this episode to have most of the Greens' recent achievements. And of course, we may miss some stuff. We can't have everything in one episode, but we are going to cover the Netherlands, the UK. We're going to go all the way to Canada and finally to Finland. Keep in mind, we've already covered the Green Wave in Germany and Belgium, so go back and check out those episodes.
And we are also going to introduce to you our Green of the episode, who is the eloquent Bas Eickhout, who has been smashing it, representing the Greens on the European level.
Okay, let's start with the Netherlands. In March 2019, provincial elections were held in Netherlands. And I know that it may sound boring because provinces are mostly responsible for spatial planning. But in the Netherlands, the provincial elections are not only for that, but the Dutch Senate is formed by the results of these elections. So it actually has a huge impact in the overall Dutch political scene. And the Dutch Greens, GroenLinks, did incredibly well. And they went from 4 seats in the Senate to 9 seats.
Nice.
And when it comes to the current political scene in the Netherlands, it's not that different than what we see in most European countries right now. There is a huge dissatisfaction and frustration with the incumbent status quo establishment centrist parties. And this is why the other party that did very well in these elections was the far-right party, FVD. They actually went from 0 seats to 12 seats. So now they have the same number of seats as the main ruling party, VVD, which used to have the most seats in the Senate.
Wow.
Another thing that's been happening in many countries is the increase in voter turnout. And just to give you a comparison, in the last election in 2015, 47% of people turned out to vote. This year, in March, this went up to 56%. So, that's a positive thing. And also not that surprising, given that people are getting mobilized and politicized. So now let's go back to how this Senate is going to work. So, like I said, the Greens are going to have 9 seats. The FVD, the far-right party, has 12. The VVD, also 12.
The VVD is the Liberal Party, right?
Yes, exactly. Basically the biggest party in the Senate. Well, they used to be. Also, the VVD used to form a coalition with other minor parties like D66 and Christian Uni. And they used to have a majority in the Senate until this election. So this means they will now have to collaborate with one of the opposition parties, either the Greens or the FVD.
Wow, so it could go two very different ways.
Exactly. But these minor parties that were a part of the majority coalition, they were asked which party they were going to be collaborating in the new Senate. And they both said they will not be collaborating with the far right party because the FVD is basically a climate change denialist party. They want to close the borders and also they also want to get out of the EU. So typical far right European party that we see in other countries as well.
Yeah, Thierry Baudet, who's their leader, he seems to me like a mix between Trump and Jordan Peterson, because he's kind of sensationalist and populist, but also kind of pseudo intellectual and pretends that he's like just exposing the truth. He just wants to reveal what's really out there, but he's also like a really great performer, and he's always attacking like the political elites, immigrants, climate scientists, journalists, left-wing teachers. So he's kind of an interesting mix of...
That's a great combo.
Isn't that a winning combination?
Yeah. But this is important for the Greens because this means the Greens' influence in the government is going to be much, much more because the minority coalition in the new Senate will be cooperating with the Greens. So that's the current wave taking place in the Netherlands. And hopefully, and probably, this will be reflected in the upcoming European elections as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That will be really interesting to see what happens. And do you think that the shooting in Utrecht 2 days before the Dutch elections had an impact on the result?
Absolutely. I think it was such emotional election. People went to the ballot with that in mind. And I think that had fostered the gain and success the far-right party, the FVD, has gotten in this election, because they've got 12 seats. Maybe they were not going to get that many. But I guess we'll never know. It was a very dodgy shooting too, 2 days before the elections.
Interestingly, a similar thing happened in Finland, where the far-right party, the Finns party, were really aided by an event that happened a couple of months earlier. The Oulu child sexual exploitation scandal, in which it was revealed that adult migrant men were grooming, i.e. raping and sexually abusing, girls under 15 in the city of Oulu. All suspects had arrived in Finland as asylum seekers or refugees. And as you can imagine, this scandal that really rocked the nation really helped the Finns party, which is, as you can imagine, anti-immigration. So as a response to the sex crimes revelations, 3 fast-track legislative projects were introduced in Parliament in January. One was to increase penalties for child sexual abuse. One was to enhance the police's ability to process people's personal data. Mm-hmm. And one was to take away Finnish citizenship from, you know, people who were made citizens, but who had originally kind of come from another country if they commit certain crimes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. So these are quite big legislative changes coming from this incident.
Very much so.
Yeah. And in January 2019, because all this kind of happened in around December 2018, the city of Oulu banned foreign asylum seekers from visiting any schools and daycare centers.
Which is understandable. I mean, if this incident led to this much legislative change and action, I can only imagine the momentum that it created and how much it affected the elections and the election results and how it affected the way people have voted. And because that kind of a thing happened ahead of the elections, right before the elections, now all the parties need to have a strong position on what happened, and then that's going to become their agenda as well during their campaigning process. And of course, because people are emotional, angry, and frustrated, and all of that because of what happened, most of them usually take a more of a conservative position, saying that they need to go back.
Yeah,
and that's how they basically capitalize on these incidents.
Exactly.
So what happened in the elections?
Yeah. So just to get back to the elections. So they happen on the 14th of April. It was one of the tightest elections in decades. And it happened on the 14th of April, and it was the parliamentary elections. Mm-hmm. And it was fantastic news for the Greens. The Finnish Green Party is called the Green League. And they swept in and got 11.5% of the votes and 20 seats, which is brilliant news for them, because that's
nice.
Yeah, it's the green wave basically continuing in Finland. And
yes,
it's 3.5% more than what they got in 2015. And it's 5 more seats, which is very significant, because the Finnish parliament just has one chamber, which has 200 seats. So 20 seats out of 200 is brilliant for Greens. That's 10% of the seats. That's very influential.
And the gain, the comparison between the numbers, what they had and what they will have now, that's huge.
Yeah, 15 to 20 seats, that's 33% increase. That's great. And they are the 5th party, which they were before, but which doesn't sound necessarily that impressive to people in 2-party political systems like me in the UK. But actually, that's good, because in Finland, you know, there's 9 parties in the parliament. So all the parties are kind of hovering. In this election, the 3 main parties were hovering around, you know, 19% of the votes, something like that. No one party got more than 20%. So it's really a multi-party system, kind of like the Swedish elections that we talked about recently, where it's inbuilt in the structure that lots of parties are talking to each other.
Exactly.
Communicating. It's really not swinging from one party controlling to another. But I guess the main news is that it's the best result they ever got, the Finnish Greens. 17 out of the 20 Greens that were elected were women.
Yes.
Amazing stuff. And 1 out of 4 people in Helsinki voted Green.
Oh, wow.
Which is really impressive. Yeah. But the biggest winners were the Social Democratic Party, the SDP, which is fairly unusual in Europe compared to recent trends to see the Social Democratic Party doing really well. Because if you compare it to the Netherlands, for example, the Social Democrats have just, dropped down in recent years, as well as, in France.
Same in Germany.
Yeah, exactly. But they were the party with the most votes in this election. They got 17.7% of the vote and they got 40 seats, which is just one more than the far-right Finns party, who got 39 seats.
Oh, God.
After the Social Democratic Party, that's got 40 seats, which made them the winners, in a sense, although they'll have to, go into coalition in order to form a government that has 101 seats, which is what you need to get the majority in parliament.
101, okay.
Yeah. So Social Democrats, 40 seats, the far-right Finns party, 39 seats, and then National Coalition, which is a kind of centre-right, socially liberal but fiscally conservative, they got 38%. And then the Centre Party, which was the party that was ruling before, well, they had the Prime Minister, they got 31 seats. And they're quite an interesting party because they're kind of agrarian party, which means that... And this is what proportional representation means, right? Is that so many different interests are represented. So this party is specifically about decentralization and supporting rural areas. And they do really well outside of the main cities in the rural areas.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the Centre Party. And they're down to like 13%. And which is, they're still going to have some kind of
influence.
Yeah. And so, and then the Greens also increased their share. The Left Alliance, which is the left-wing party, which is also quite small, also increased their share. And they're just a bit behind the Greens. They have 16 seats compared to the Greens, 20. And then you've also got kind of smaller parties that have 10 seats, 5 seats, 1 seat, like the Christian Democrats, Swedish People's Party. Yeah.
So it kind of sounds like the centrist parties lost some seats and the parties on the right and left got those seats from the centrist parties.
Yes, it does seem that way. I mean, actually all parties gained some seats except for the Centre Party, which lost 18 seats.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So that
was it's the same in every country. Like, this is such a pattern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The context behind this also is that in 2017, there was this crisis, this political crisis that led to a lot of drama before 2017. Okay, so the coalition was a centre-right coalition of the Centre Party, the far-right Finns Party, and the centre-right National Coalition. As I said, National Coalition is liberal, conservative, pro-gay rights, pro-European, pro-multiculturalism, pretty liberal, really, for a right-wing party. And so they were all three in coalition, so centre-right government, basically. And what happened in 2017 is that the Finns Party elected a new chair. And this guy, Jussi Halla-aho, is a super hardline. Like, he's a critic. He's a really kind of extreme critic of immigration and multiculturalism. He's an MEP. He pledged when he was elected to take the party to a more nationalistic and Eurosceptic direction. And he's also he's just been kind of really unpleasant and borderline racist. And all the other parties really don't want to work with him.
Yeah, he sounds great.
Oh, he's
pleasure to
lovely.
Work with.
Yeah. And so soon after he was elected as chair of the Finns Party, the leaders of the other parties that the Finns Party was in coalition with both tweeted that they would not cooperate with his party anymore because he's too extreme. So they then expected to make a new coalition with other parties. Mm-hmm. But what happened instead is that 20 MPs defected from the Finns party and formed a new group.
Oh, boy.
Called the New Alternative. And that group decided to keep working with the ruling parties in order for them to keep their majority. This new group that was 20 MPs defecting from the Finns party, they proposed to the two other parties in government, the Centre Party and the National Coalition, that they would work with them instead of the Finns party.
Ah, okay, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so they, 20 MPs was just enough for them to have a majority if they mm-hmm. went into coalition with the two other ruling parties. So they were now in coalition with the National Coalition and the Centre Party. And the Finns party then went into the opposition and was not in government anymore.
Yes, okay.
Quite complicated to get your head around, but that was the situation then. That was the context for this election. Mm-hmm. And what happened is that the new group that formed from people that defected from the Finns party, they just kind of disintegrated this election. They weren't really in the picture. And the Finns party regained the MEPs that it had lost to that group. So they're kind of back to 39 MPs, which is what they had in 2005.
Uh-huh. So before the crisis.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not really a victory for them as such, even though because this new group of defectors had formed, it looked technically like they just won 18 seats.
Yeah, but they actually won the seats that they had lost. Okay.
Exactly. So it's not a huge victory at all for the Finns.
Yeah.
In the way that, you know, it might be reported.
Yeah.
Which we've already talked about how, you know, far right gains get so much more media attention than any other kind of political surge.
Exactly. It sells.
It sells. Yeah. So to summarize what happened in Finland, you've now got a process of negotiation, which is ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
In which the parties are communicating with each other over who's going to form a government with who. Obviously, the SDP with the highest number of seats has the priority over, you know, they are the first ones to be able to try and form a government. So there's a good chance they're going to try and work with the Green League.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see what happens. That could be really interesting.
This process takes months anyway. Yeah. It did when mm-hmm. Sweden was trying to form a government as well. It took them at least a few months, as far as I can remember. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be the same, probably.
Yeah, absolutely. And let me just give you like a tiny bit of history of the Finnish Greens, because it's interesting because they are the oldest, in a sense, they are the oldest Green Party in Europe, in the world. Like they're...
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't a party until 1987, when other parties had already been formed, but they got mm-hmm. the first seats because they got seats when they were still just like a coalition of different environmental, feminist, disability rights activists just coming mm-hmm. together and standing for seats in 1983. They got two seats then. And then after that, they merged officially to create a party. And they're still kind of, so they're very much like other parties, but especially in this case, they're very much, you know, grounded in activism and different groups coming together. And that still affects how they make decisions in the party, how open they are.
Yeah.
And so on. And they've already had a big impact on Finnish politics. You know, they're one of the reasons, a big reason why Finland's considered one of the greenest countries in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And why the air quality is so good there, why the deforestation is really low, why the CO2 emissions per capita is really low also. So yeah, they've already had a big impact.
Okay.
And another impact of the Finnish Greens having an influential place in politics is that they've been able to implement stuff like the universal basic income trial that started in 2017.
Yes.
Yeah, that was really interesting. When 2,000 participants received 560 euros a month, to see if that would help them be more employable, because they weren't employed at that mm-hmm. point. And unfortunately, the trial will end, and it wasn't considered that successful.
Oh.
because apparently people weren't actually more likely to have a job by the end. But why would you get a job if you're getting free money?
Exactly.
Honestly.
Anyway.
Yeah, they were like, I'm quite poor, but I'm much happier. But also, you know, the trial was very flawed. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people said this shouldn't have just been unemployed people. This should be everyone. And so the idea that you can dismiss a whole scheme, an idea based on one small flawed experiment, is obviously not right.
Of course. Of course.
Let's see what happens when the Greens, if the Greens get back into government. If you're enjoying this episode, check out our previous news episodes about green politics around the world, and also our interviews with green politicians, activists, and experts.
Okay, let's cross the Atlantic and talk about the Canadian Greens.
Mm.
In April 2019, general elections were held in the province of Prince Edward Island, Canada. The results? Green Party will form the official opposition for the first time in Canadian history and North America in general, too.
Yes.
Yes.
That's awesome.
So first, a little bit about the Prince Edward Island and the political scene there, just to put things into perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Since 1800s, the island has had a very stable two-party system. The power was basically going from the Progressive Conservatives to the Liberals, and then from the Liberals to the Progressive Conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
So each party would typically serve three terms before being replaced by the opposition, and the ruling party would have a majority.
Right.
Yeah.
It sounds like the UK.
Yeah, exactly. But that was the case until these elections, because yes, the Progressive Conservatives came in the first, so they won. But mm-hmm. they won with a very thin lead.
Hmm.
So they've got 12 seats, and for a majority, you need to have 14. The Liberals came in third for the first time since 1800s. So,
wow.
I know. So that now they're going to have only 6 seats. And of course, the second party was the Greens, who's going to have 8 seats. And it's really incredible because the Greens went from 2 seats to 8 seats in this election.
Wow. They like quadrupled their seats.
Exactly. Yeah. So this island is really interesting because they have a very exciting history of Canadians' political firsts. Like, they elected the first non-European premier in Canada. Mm. Then they elected the first female premier. And then the first openly gay leader, too.
Wow.
All happening on that island.
Is there something in the water, or...?
I know. We should go there.
What's going on?
But this island is also the smallest province of Canada, and it's a region that's heavily reliant on fishing and farming. So as you can imagine, they're also experiencing the effects of climate change.
Mm.
So how did the Green Party make this happen in this election? Bevin Baker, the leader of the Green Party on the island, ran on a fiscally conservative but socially progressive platform.
Oh.
Interesting, right? I know.
Mm.
And his promise was basically to do politics differently on the island. He was emphasizing on the fact that they were more genuine, and they sounded more genuine than other establishment, or establishment politicians. So he reformulated the Greens' message there and said that they want to work with farmers, but not against them. They want to help them, support them.
Mm.
Which is something we're very familiar with. At this point, we're seeing this in many places, Greens rebranding themselves as the genuine outsider.
Mm.
Want to bring change and crush the status quo. So that's kind of what they went with.
Wow. Because it's quite an unusual place for Greens to do well, isn't it? Because it's not very urban. As you said, it's lots of kind of farmers and fishermen.
Exactly.
You know, fishing communities.
Yeah. And I think that's why they went with that kind of message when they rebranded themselves. But this election is important and interesting for another reason as well, because so it basically included a referendum on electoral reform.
Oh.
Yeah, so voters were asked specifically whether the island should adopt a mixed member proportional system. And keep in mind that no province in Canada has made the move to an MPP system before.
Yes, I know that they did have a referendum on it in British Columbia, though, last year, didn't they? But that did not pass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think even on the island, they had a referendum on this in 2016. So this is kind of like a follow up after that. But as you can see, they're still going after being the first when it comes to this as well. Like if this passed, they would be the first province to vote and like pass the mixed member proportional system in Canada.
Yeah.
They just lead the way when it comes to these kinds of things. But in this election, this didn't pass. The vote was quite close, but the proposal was basically rejected at the end.
Damn.
But if it wasn't rejected under a mixed member proportional system, voters would get two votes on election day. One vote would be cast for a seat in the voter's constituency, and a second vote would be cast for a political party. And of course, the aim here is to assign seats in a legislature in the same proportion as parties receive votes in an election.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we'll see. This may come up again in the next elections. But it's really interesting that this, like, small island is making huge political revolutions happen there.
Yeah, really interesting. It makes me want to check it out and go there.
Book your tickets, Julia.
Very green of me. I'll just go there for the weekend. Fly there. Oh, it looks beautiful as well.
I'm just Googling this island now.
Yeah.
You podcasting.
Yeah.
Are you also checking out the plane tickets?
I'm looking at the beaches. Yeah. Okay. Well, to give you all a general idea of how the Green Party of Canada does, it's kind of struggling, you know, similarly to the UK and to the US with this first past the post this first past the post voting system that they have, and that obviously they keep trying to get rid of with referenda, but which don't pass. But they're polling really well for the upcoming general elections in October, so it's going to be really exciting to see what happens there.
Yes.
Yeah, speaking of the UK, we just had elections on the 2nd of May, local elections across many parts of the UK. And honestly, that was absolutely incredible for the Greens. It was unexpected. I think, you know, even people's wildest dreams didn't predict that we would do so well, because what happened was we saw a 273% increase in local council seats for the Greens.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And like, if you look proportionally at all the parties, the Greens, you know, they more than doubled their seats, and no other parties did so well. And they also, you know, they got seats for the first time in loads of new councils where there weren't any Greens before. 50 new councils specifically across the UK have Greens that didn't have them before. So yeah, best local election results in a 40-year history of the party. And interestingly, which will probably signal quite an interesting EU election in the 23rd of May in the UK, what we saw was the Lib Dems and the Greens both do really well in this election. Lib Dems increased their seats by 109%. But all the other parties, and especially all the parties that are pro-Brexit, all very much on the fence, like Labour. So that's the Labour Party, the Conservative Party, and UKIP, the UK Independence Party. They all absolutely shot down, especially the Conservative Party. They just had an awful night. They lost one. Rejoice. They lost 1,269 seats.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And a third of the councils that they controlled. Labour didn't do quite as badly, but it still wasn't a very good night for them.
But they did quite badly.
But they did. They lost some seats and they lost some councils. They lost 63 seats in total and they lost six councils.
I think they weren't expecting this.
No. I mean, it's, even though the Conservatives objectively did worse, in Labour's in opposition, you know, they should be capitalising on the fact that everyone is disappointed with what Theresa May's doing and what
it's so interesting because, exactly. It's so interesting because both the ruling party and the opposition are losing seats.
Yeah.
you don't see this often.
Yeah, exactly.
And I've been saying this, so many people have been saying this. Corbyn, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Of course this was going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. It's really incredible that even though it's so clear that like the two clearly pro-Remain parties, the Greens and the Liberal Democrats, are the only winners of this election, it's incredible that the Labour Party and the Conservative Party, both Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn, their leaders, mm-hmm. haven't got the message that their Brexit positions are bad. I mean, this is especially applicable to Corbyn.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Labour Party is still saying, oh, this is a message that we're not delivering what we promised. We're not delivering the Brexit that we promised.
I mean, exactly.
It's extremely strange cognitive dissonance.
Absolutely. That's what that is. Yes.
Yeah. To think that people, by voting for Remain parties, are trying to give you a message that they want Brexit is very strange.
Yeah. You just believe what you want to believe in.
Yeah.
At that point, there is no critical thinking. Mm. That if this is not even an opinion, it's just what they believe in.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. That's
it. And I think it's really going to work against them, Labour.
Yeah, I mean, it is already. Elections.
And yeah, this is evident.
And it is inevitable. It was absolutely inevitable.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can't just not make your mind up about one of the two issues that matter to people the most,
mm-hmm.
as the main opposition of the country, and just get away with it and still get votes.
Yeah. And also, they can't do what they've been doing so far, which is expecting people to vote for them and to be a member of their political party whilst they disagree with what they're doing. You know,
exactly.
So long they've ignored what their members have said about wanting Labour to have a anti-Brexit position, and now this is the result. It's taken a long time coming, but finally I think hopefully they're going to realize that you can't just ignore your voters, you can't just ignore your members, that this is what happens. But I think about this election, we can't make it all about the EU. You know, this wasn't just mm-hmm. protest votes. Oh, people are voting Lib Dem and Green because they're annoyed at Labour and the Tories about Brexit. There were so many reasons that the Greens did well here. You know, climate change is very much in people's minds at the moment, with Greta Thunberg
exactly.
coming to the UK, with the huge protests across the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, local parties, having supported local parties here in the UK, I can see how much work over years and years has gone into these local elections. So mm-hmm. That's definitely a huge factor. I think it's important not to make it all about the EU as well.
Mm-hmm. I think they do make it all about the EU, because then the Lib Dems and the Greens gains from this election become a protest vote, a one-time thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they are trying to make it seem like that, because of course they need to. It's a part of their propaganda. But people are following up with their vote. Like, a new member is joining the Green Party every 3 minutes since the elections.
Yeah, I saw
every
that.
Every 3 minutes.
That's crazy.
So people are not only going to the ballot to vote for the Green Party, but they're also following up with that by becoming a member of the party.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just much more than just protest votes. Like, don't get me wrong, I acknowledge the fact that people are frustrated, dissatisfied with the current status quo parties and their not so strong position on things that matter people most, like Brexit, climate change. But everything aside, just like you said, saying that this is a protest vote undermines all the hard work and effort the Greens have put into this campaign in local elections.
Yeah.
It's not that simple. You just can't explain this wave and momentum by saying, oh yeah, it's just protest votes. Like, there's much more than that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like you said, people are concerned about climate change, the climate crisis, and we got this result also because people's survival mechanism got recoded. Like, in the past, people would vote for economic reasons, for mm-hmm. more jobs, for the minimum wage to be raised, or for refugees to be deported out of the country, because they believed that their survival was dependent on those things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then, thanks to the Greens' alarmed but hopeful messaging around mm-hmm. the climate crisis, thanks to the civil disobedience movement's activism, and of course those kids, the youngsters, who were out on the street.
Yeah.
They made people more aware of the kind of threat we're facing and our planet is facing. And I think it just, at some point, people just went, oh yeah, I probably won't need an increase in the minimum wage if I just don't have a planet to live in.
Yes.
Or what am I going to do with my pension if my kids can't breathe?
Yeah.
What are they going to do with their inheritance if they can't breathe?
Mm.
Just like it makes so many things that these mainstream establishment parties talk about just so irrelevant. And
yeah.
then people yeah. then, of course, turn to their parties, the establishment parties, to see what they have to offer
mm-hmm.
when it comes to the climate crisis. And it's just good old status quo.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
that means, because the status quo means the most vulnerable are going to get fucked over. And that's the working mm-hmm. class, that's disabled people, that's the mm-hmm. homeless, etc. So of course you go to a party that has a strong stance on issues, like both issues, like climate change, Brexit, because
yeah.
their survival now depends on a planet's survival. And mm-hmm. who's been screaming that for years and years? It's not like the Green Party just showed up and say, oh yeah, give me the votes because Corbyn fucked up. It's
yeah.
just so much more than a fucking protest vote. I'm done.
Yeah.
Thank you. This was
yeah.
like therapy for me. Just getting all the Twitter frustration out.
Yeah, no, you're so right. And I think it's also clear, you know, whatever Labour says about this being a protest vote, mm-hmm. it's very clear that it's noticed how much environmental factors are important for people now
mm-hmm.
because it's trying to pitch itself as a climate friendly party.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the fact that Labour administrations and Labour members of parliament all around the country support airport expansion, don't support clean air legislation.
New coal mines.
Yeah. New coal mine opening in Cumbria
mm-hmm.
that Labour's supporting. You know, actually, when it comes down to it, Labour isn't environmentally friendly, even though some people in it might be.
Because, Julia, being environment friendly, being that kind of a party is not enough anymore. You can't be at the center when it comes to this.
Mm-hmm.
You're either a denialist and you act like that, or
yeah.
you're acting, taking action every day.
Or you're changing everything.
Yeah.
Or at least just getting on with changing as much as you can where you are, which Labour Party isn't even doing. It's
mm-hmm.
actively supporting damaging things, continuing and expanding as well. Like, you know, airports expanding, it's supporting that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're absolutely right. And this is really going to be interesting to see what happens in the European elections, because
exactly
the two big issues that people care about right now in the UK is the EU and climate change. And
mm-hmm.
on both those positions, Green Party has a really popular view. So
much to offer.
So much to offer. And they already have three MEPs representing
mm-hmm.
them in the European Parliament. So let's see if that can increase. That'd be really interesting to see.
Yeah. And also, I think this local election has gotten rid of something, a myth that the Greens everywhere had to deal with for years. It's whenever you say, oh yeah, I'm going to vote for the Green Party, you get the response, oh, so you're just going to waste your vote?
Yeah.
So your vote is just going to go to waste then?
Mm.
And it's not only the UK. There was this, I just came across an interesting article about Australian voters and what they had Googled ahead of their elections, which are going to be held on the 18th of May. So pretty soon. So they looked at the Google Trends data, which was released on the 1st of May. And the data revealed that employment, immigration, and climate change have been the most searched election topics so far. But there was one other thing that was one of the top Google questions. It was, quote, any point voting green? Question mark, end of quote.
Wow, really?
Yeah, so people want to vote for the Green
mm-hmm.
Party. They are interested in their policy proposals. They are interested in what they have to offer. But that myth about
yeah.
like your vote is going to go to waste,
mm-hmm.
that just stops some people
yeah.
from voting green. And I think finally we can just show this election as an example of like, no, it doesn't go to waste. And
yeah,
you know,
and that's where we need to take the chances is in these elections, which are proportional, because in a
mm-hmm.
sense, in general elections in the UK and in Canada with these really unfair voting systems, sometimes
yeah.
you can see why people would think it's a waste. and yeah. they have to be tactical. But exactly as you're saying, you know, there's not much knowledge about electoral systems.
Mm-hmm.
And so people don't realize that, you know, at a local level and at a European level, it's so much more proportional. So you can just vote with your heart and your conscience.
Okay, so hope you enjoyed that. Let's see if this green wave carries on into the European elections on May 23rd. Keep an eye out for our analysis of what happened. Watch out for more election coverage in places where they didn't have a green wave. But in the meantime, we want to hear from you. Send us your thoughts about what's going on in your country. What's your sense of how the Greens are doing? Let us know on Twitter at BigGreenPolPod. Okay, Julia, please introduce our Green of the episode.
Right, yes. Drum roll.
No.
Okay, yes, our Green of the episode is Bas Eickhout, who is a Dutch Green member of the European Parliament since 2009. He represents the Dutch Green Party, Green Left, or GroenLinks, that we've just been talking about. He's an environmental scientist and also co-authored the IPCC report on climate change, which was key in catalyzing this huge wave of environmental movements we've seen worldwide. As one of the two leading candidates of the European Greens for the 2019 European Parliament elections, alongside Ska Keller, who's a German MEP, he recently represented the European Greens in the debate between the five leading candidates to be the next European Commission president. And he talked about the green vision of Europe. And here's a clip from the debate.
Before I went into politics, a climate change researcher, and climate change brought me into the political arena. And I think climate change is one of the greatest challenges that we need to tackle, and that is certainly one of my core beliefs that we need to tackle at the European level. Now, climate change is becoming more and more center stage, literally tonight. But I think it's more important that we not only talk about climate change, but also act on it. We as European Greens, we as Greens know how to act on climate. But we also know that action on climate change needs to go hand in hand with social justice. And that's exactly the new Europe that we are fighting for. A green and social Europe, so a different Europe. We believe in European cooperation, we believe in strengthening European democracy, but we want to see a socially just and green Europe. This is about future EU powers, and this is where EU at the moment is lacking powers.
Yes, but how? Tell us how.
Yes, so how? This is exactly where a campaign is for, that people do realize that you need to strengthen Europe in order to give them the possibility to tax companies. What is happening now is that countries are just competing against each other to offer the lowest rate of taxation on companies. This needs to be European power in order to make sure that every company, and certainly tech companies, are paying their fair share of taxation. And how this means in every country, and we need to make sure that they are convinced and the people are convinced that this is the only way to treat and to tackle the company. Every time when we are discussing, we seem to agree, although this is exactly a topic where the current European Union did not deliver. Why is there still possibility not to pay your interns? Also there we can make regulation, has not been proposed. The third, room for investment. That means we need to change our austerity policies. That has always been imposed by the current status quo parties. This is exactly the problem. Everyone is talking about climate change, but we need to act on climate change. Need to keep the fossils in the ground. And this European Commission is still too much also giving subsidies to fossil fuels.
Thank
you. And that's
one
of the biggest problems.
All right, folks, that's our show. You can follow us and show us some love on Twitter at BigGreenPolPod. You can find us on any podcast apps, iTunes, Spotify, and SoundCloud.
And if you want to help us make green politics more accessible, subscribe and support us by leaving us a rating or a review. Thank you so much, and see you soon.